Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is our last hour, and TNT stands for trinitrotoluene, a.k.a. dynamite. And I want to believe our last hour is going to be dynamite here. I've had a good session this morning with an activist from the UK already called Cheryl Burushko. I've had Dr. Judy Wileyman on talking about vaccine lies, propaganda, etc. that's being pumped through our media sources, our mainstream media, our governments, our medical professions, our pharmaceutical industries. Call them what you want. They've launched an all-out attack on us and we're being blitzed by their propaganda. I'm very happy to be joined again in my last hour by Michael McChaves, who is an activist and a very well-spoken, actually. He articulates well the mood of the people that are up to their eyes and sick of all that's going on in terms of stripping us of our liberties, our freedoms, our ability to earn, our ability to move. I want to welcome Mick back onto the show. Mick, how are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. Thank you for having me back on. A lot's happened since we last spoke.
Yeah, the last time we were on, the show wrapped up with us promoting or trying to promote you to try and break into the music charts. Believe it or not, this guy had a single out that was doing really, really well in the Amazon charts. It was called Killer Killer COVID. And we asked people to download the explicit version so we could get you onto the charts. There was a big push. The cutoff date was midnight on a Thursday. It looked like a penalty kick. It looked like he was going to be busting onto the charts on the Sunday on all the mainstream radio networks. But no, what happened?
Unbelievable. When we spoke, we were standing at number 26 on the UK chart, in the midweek chart, which doesn't reflect on the national chart until the weekend. So after your show, the push really worked. It went back up to number one in the Amazon chart. So people were downloading it after we spoke. So we were bang on for a chart entry, at least at 26, if not higher. And then the chart came out and we had disappeared completely. Like the song didn't exist, like I didn't exist. They didn't ban it, they just erased it from history. Absolutely crazy, but it was still at number one on the Amazon chart.
You see, the thing is, right, they literally pushed the button somewhere and that was you gone, like a puff of smoke, you were gone. It didn't matter, you promoted it, it didn't matter, you got all those sales, and they want to, obviously, along with every other institution and establishment in the so-called United Kingdom or Great Britain, they're going to have to drop great pretty soon. Yeah. There's nothing great about it. You know, if they can do that, you know, they can really do anything. They can literally manipulate us at the touch of a button, which must have been a little bit of a kick in the teeth for you. But at the same time, it got up until that point, it certainly got you guys a lot of, how would you say it, a lot of exposure and a lot of traffic coming your way, maybe from people who didn't know where you were. So although you didn't ultimately get the end game or you reached the end goal of, you know, getting on the national radio, at the same time, I would say there was a lot of PR wins for you guys there in terms of getting your user base expanded and more people were aware of what you were doing, which I know happened after you came on here the last time. You know, you take it for granted sometimes people know what you're doing if you have a big group that maybe follows you, but there's still tens and hundreds of thousands of other people out there that haven't got connected to you at point. So that's one positive, Mick. I would hope that the support that you got from that, would it give you a little bit of a lift?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when the chart came out, I was devastated. I built myself up to having that hit single. You know, I know it sounds crazy, but I built myself up to it. So when the chart came out on the Friday night and we had gone completely, I was upset. But yeah. I'm like, right, leave that, Mick. The pop star career, put that on one side. Let's get back to the fight. You know, let's get back to what I started doing. With the song, right, don't get me wrong, with the song, there's a few lines in the song where the truths are so blatant in your face that even people in society, normal people, not resistance people, would listen to that and think, hold on, why don't the doctors want to get this injection? Why don't, you know, there's stuff like that in it. And so it did move our cause forward a great deal. And a lot of people bought it and shared it. And that's Martin's field of expertise, you know, and he's working on other stuff, using my voice, working on other stuff I've said in my videos, that we can bring that message out, but with the medium of music. And, you know, all I can do is talk, like I said before, but Martin's the brains of the outfit, and he's going to come up with more stuff. And we're going to do the same again. We're not going to try for a chart hit this time, but we're going to use the music to share the message. We reach so many more people with that song than with my Telegram channel. So, you know, it was all good. It was all good. And it doesn't end there. You know, we're still going to carry on promoting it. I've performed it a couple of times now in public. I performed it on stage with a live band, Victorious. They were amazing. I'm performing with Victorious again in a few weeks' time. So, like, it blows my mind that I'm even doing stuff like that.
Have you done a gig at Downing Street yet? No?
Not yet, but that's on the cards, let me tell you.
You need to get a big platform, a big speaker bank, and get up there and blast it straight into number 10. That would be sweet as a nut. That would get the news all right. Whether or not it gets the charts is another thing, but that would definitely make the news.
It's been good.
Let's face it, you know, we're sort of saying tongue-in-cheek about being a pop star, and it would have been funny and it would have been nice to be able to say that you did it, but the driver for you doing that wasn't to be a pop star and to retire on a desert island somewhere near Richard Branson. It was to get the message out and to get it out by whatever means you could to as many people as you could. And earlier on today, I had a lady on called Cheryl Barushko, and she was a graphic designer by trade. She started printing up these stickers, you know, these anti-narrative stickers, printed up tens and tens of thousands of them. Just her business was going around slapping them up everywhere, on buses, on lampposts, in public places and government buildings. And that was her way of reaching out, because the footfall, if you think about it, if you put one sticker up, even one sticker on a lamppost, and it challenges people to think, even as they're passing by, think of the tens of thousands of people that pass that one point on a daily basis, and then multiply that by 30,000 people. And all of a sudden you have this outreach that goes beyond what you do on social media, or for example, a Telegram channel or a Twitter page. You actually have people in the real world that are out there getting exposed to the message, the people that actually need to hear it. And I think, you know, you mentioned this the last time you were on, and I agree with you. Social media is a good thing to spread, for example, information about what you're doing, update people about what you're doing, but it can become very insular, and it can become like an echo chamber that it's people that already know the message. You're trying to wake, as best you can, wake more new people up, as well as encourage those that are already on the right side. You made a video clip a few days ago, and by the way, it's if you have Telegram, Mix channel is Mad Mix M-I-X Conspiracies, is that correct?
On That's Telegram? It. Mad Bits Conspiracies.
Yeah, he's got a Telegram channel. It's not censored. He can post what he wants. He can talk how he likes. He can be as blunt as he likes, and you can take him or leave him, okay? But the bottom line is he's putting out a message that's very hard to argue with and doesn't really have a counter. As far as I'm concerned, he's telling the truth. And a few days ago, you put a video clip on Telegram, Mad Mix Conspiracies on Telegram. We were talking about, you know, you'd been doing a protest, and you were speaking at it. It was a town centre protest, and you'd actually addressed the people. And you commented on, you know, there were people just walking past. They were like zombies. They weren't stopping. They weren't listening. And you get to the point where you question, am I wasting my breath here? You know, literally speaking to these people in public. Of course, you're not going to quit the fight, and you're looking at other avenues to get the message out there. But it does become really soul-destroying whenever you're trying to help people and you're not going to benefit from this. It's they will benefit, hopefully, health-wise, and their children will, but they just look at you as if you're a lunatic and they just shuffle on by like zombies. That is disheartening, my friend, isn't it?
It is. We were in Worthing on the South Coast, and we had some great response. We gave out nearly all our light newspapers, you know, the newspaper with all the truth information in. We gave out so many leaflets that day. But when I got on the mic and was talking to people, the people in masks, I call them zombies, they're like the walking dead. They're wearing their mask in the high street, and they don't even know why they're wearing their masks in the high street. I'm like, you've had 3 injections, but you're wearing your mask. So that tells you that your 3 injections aren't protecting you from anything, because you're still wearing a mask. Yep. And I came away feeling that we were doing that last year. We were doing it in, you know, most of last year. And I came away feeling like, if they're still at that stage, then they're too far gone for us. We can't wake those people up. So I came away feeling really heavy on myself. I'm still going to do it. I'm doing one this Thursday down in Guildford in South England. But I'm not going to speak on the mic, you know. I'm not going to try and address these people anymore. I'm going to let them come to us, take the light newspaper, you know, read our yellow boards if they choose to, take the leaflets. But I'm not going to engage in them verbally. It doesn't work for me anymore. So what I've done, I've moved my plan of attack. Something really, really dark happened this week. And I'll try and tell you about it without bursting into tears. I woke up to a phone call from a good friend of mine, part of the resistance. He has a channel as well on Telegram. His name's Chris. We call him.
What is it, by the way? What's his channel, by the way?
UK Rising.
UK Rising on Telegram?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to make sure I don't miss anybody's contacts that people can go on and check them out. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting. Yeah. So it's Telegram UK Rising. Check that one out as well.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've been friends with him only since the COVID. I didn't know him before the COVID. You know, we've all come together through the COVID. Anyway, he phoned me the other morning. And he was explaining to me about his mum. And she had breathing difficulty, long-term asthma sufferer. She was 79 years old. Had to go into hospital. I had spoken to him a few weeks earlier. He was saying he was petrified if his parents had to go in, but his mum ended up having to go in. He contacted the hospital. They told him what course of treatment he was doing. He told them not to. They didn't want them using midazolam on his mum. They used midazolam, and within 2 days she was dead. She passed away. Now he's fighting it. He's going to fight against the hospital. He's doing everything he can do, but we're letting our loved ones have to go into hospital, particularly our elderly. They have to go into hospital when they need help. And in the old days, and when I say the old days, I mean 2019, you'd think that if a loved one went into hospital, they would get help. Now, if they go into hospital and they're past a certain age, they get murdered. Without a shadow of doubt, they did not need to be using a drug like midazolam, which is a respiratory suppressant, on his mother, who was having trouble breathing anyway. They put her on a COVID ward.
Putting a pillow over their head. It's like they might as well have put a pillow over their face.
That's exactly what they did. So my focus now is hospitals. I'm telling everyone who watches my channel. I went to a meeting last night of the Stand in the Parks. And I told everyone who has a Stand in the Park group, take your yellow boards outside the hospitals. Everything that has happened in the last 2 years has been perpetrated by the National Health Service. Every injection that's been given to a child has gone through the National Health Service. Every GP who's going out and getting £15 an injection is cancelling appointments for sick people so that he can go and get £15 for every injection, and he's knocking up 20 or 30 injections in a day, right? These people have sold their soul to the devil. We've got NHS staff who, people in the UK were standing on the street clapping these people. They're using midazolam and morphine.
Yeah, the pathway to death, they call it as
They call it pathway.
Make no bones about it, Mick. They call it the pathway to death. They say we want to make your death as painless and as peaceful as we possibly can. They don't say we want to heal you. We don't want to see you discharged. We don't want to see you getting up out of that hospital bed. We want your pathway. They even preempt it. They already got a name for it. And they're not, this isn't, by the way, this isn't a term Mick has come up with or that I've come up with. It's called the Liverpool Pathway to Death. That is from a health trust to assist people to die peacefully, as they would say, rather than to be discharged from the hospital, and that prevention is better than cure has been completely turned on its head, my friend. Yeah, basically the bottom line.
You know, we have the history that we're told of World War II and death camps. But what I've witnessed, what I've experienced in this last 2 years is these places that we used to call NHS hospitals are now nothing more than death camps. Exactly like you said, you go in there, they don't want to treat you. They put you on a pathway. So you dialed 999 for an emergency thinking you're going to get help, and they put you on a pathway to death. You're not dying quick enough for them. So I'm going to take my protest, my yellow boards, my light newspapers, my leaflets outside the hospitals. I'm going to stand across the road from the hospital. I'm not going to go on their property so they can call the police. I'm going to stand across the road from the hospital with my yellow boards, and these yellow boards are going to tell people, we need to talk about midazolam. We need to talk about this pathway. We need to talk about NHS people injecting children. These are the things we need to talk about. The NHS used to be for the people. It used to be about saving lives. Now it's about murder. We know that the vaccine is killing people. We know that the midazolam is killing people. Sorry.
The other thing is as well, and this is disturbing as well, because you'll be aware of this too, but maybe other people aren't aware of this, that for a long time when this all kicked off, if someone was taken in and put into a so-called COVID ward, for the benefit of the patient and to protect the family and to protect straight, people were isolated and kept separate from their loved ones. So if your mom was taken into hospital, she couldn't breathe, she was on life support, you were not allowed in. And if she was dying, they would give her an iPad or a mobile phone, literally, and a nurse would hold it up to her face and she might wave goodbye as she passed over to the other side. This was actually happening. There were do not resuscitate notices placed over the heads of people with learning difficulties. Let me say that again, learning difficulties in NHS trusts. Families were not allowed in. So if that said person had an incident, instead of trying to resuscitate them or give them CPR, they were told, do not resuscitate. This has actually happened in hospitals within the United Kingdom over the last 2 years. So the whole preconception, at least in the past, was you get sick, you go to hospital, you get treated. Obviously, there's people being discharged from hospitals daily. Not everyone that's being brought in is coming out in a body bag. However, there are certain elements of the NHS whereby they are facilitating a pathway to death. That's their own words. That's not a anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist term that you have dreamt up or I have dreamt up. That's out there in the national press. You can go and check it out on their website. And this business about midazolam, there's ongoing court cases being taken about the alleged administration of midazolam to patients in hospitals to cause premature death. These cases are ongoing. And if you want to know anything, Google remdesivir, Google midazolam, understand what you're dealing with here and understand that this has been applied to certain people in certain places for the last 2 years, and it has not brought about recovery. It has brought about premature death, which is highly disturbing.
I want to go back to my friend. He went to the hospital where his mum was in Wales. He lives up here in London, just south of London near me. He went to the hospital. He went to Wales. He went to the hospital. They refused him and his brother access. And they called the police. The hospital called the police on two sons who wanted to see their mum. Yeah. And they called the police to get him removed from the hospital. This is the kind of country that I'm living in now. This is why I hate so much my government, the authorities, the police, and I will fight and die doing this because of what's going on. This doesn't end for me. This never ends for me until every single one of these people are brought to justice. They can stop the vaccine rollout. They can stop the mandates. But these people need to be brought to justice. And there needs to be some kind of retribution. Because I'll tell you another quick story. My phone goes every day with people in hospital. It's kind of one of the things we do. I spoke about it last time. There was a young lady in hospital. Her baby, 7 months old, was taken into intensive care. They wouldn't let her in the intensive care to be with her baby because she wasn't vaccinated.
Yeah, I've seen that clip. Yep, yep.
Now, we, people within the resistance, I didn't get involved in that case, but people within the resistance, because of what we're doing, got down to that hospital. She had backup. She was allowed to see her baby, right? And so that was a small victory. But we shouldn't even have to do that because she's not vaccinated. No. The health minister has just said that the doctor and nurse that are looking after her baby don't need to be vaccinated. But the mum to come in and visit her baby does need to be vaccinated. How does that work? Where's the logic in this? There's no logic in this.
There is no logic, mate. There is. And that's one of the things that drives you insane. And I think that's why you get so worked up and you get so passionate about this. It's because there's a complete disconnect between what's right and what's wrong. But the government are trying to blur the lines and they're trying to invert what is good to be something that's bad and what is bad is now supposed to be something that is good. Like if I had said to you, Mick, you know, 3 years ago, you're going to have to form a group called a resistance group to allow a mother to see a seven-month-old baby in an intensive care unit in a hospital in England, you would have said, you're a crazy guy, Rick. You're the crazy man here. That's never going to happen in my country. That's never going to happen with our people. But here we are, and we're talking about it. We're talking about it on a radio show. That's how far we've gone.
It's an everyday thing in my life now. A day doesn't go past when I don't get a message from someone whose loved one is trapped in a hospital. And I make videos and... Maybe I'm dangerous, maybe I'm spreading bad information, but I say in my video, I'm like, look, if you can avoid going to the NHS, you must avoid it because of what we've just spoke about, because they will kill your loved ones. If your loved ones are past a certain age and they're having a heart attack or whatever, they will not be treated. They will be murdered. They will be put on the pathway. And I've been urging people not to go to hospital, but I know there are circumstances where people have to go into hospital. I get that. I do understand it. But once they're in there, they put them on the COVID ward. They deny everybody access. There's nothing we can do. If we try, they call the police and have you physically removed or arrested. It's so 1984. I can't even imagine. Like you just said, I would never believe that.
1984 wasn't as bad as this. This has actually taken that blueprint and it seems to have moved it an inch or two further down the line. Do you know what we're going to do? We're due a break here and I don't want to start something and then get the momentum broken up. So let's take a pause for 2 minutes. We're going to have an ad break.
I think I need one.
And when we're back, we'll examine this in a little bit more detail. So you're listening to Mick Chaves and Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded, TNT Radio. Don't go away. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Welcome back. We're into the last furlong of the show here. I'm joined by Michael McChaves from the Kent Resistance, let me just say. He's talking to me about the shenanigans and skullduggery and nefarious behaviour that's being perpetrated on the citizens of the United Kingdom and abroad by our so-called governments and by our so-called medical establishments. That's a fact. It doesn't obviously apply to everybody. Obviously, we're not all being euthanized in a processing plant. However, there are people being brought into hospitals, denied access by their families, and then put onto so-called pathways of death. That is absolutely undisputable, and it's happening day by day. The one thing you don't want is for your mum or dad or anybody for that matter to be wheeled in there and denied access to the families, because literally, what can you do? You can't see them. You can't visit them. You know, I've had a lot of nurses on here, ICU nurses from across the world, saying the best thing a patient can have in an ICU department is not a ventilator. Medication. It's a personal contact with a loved one. They need to hear the voice of a loved one. They need to feel the touch of a loved one. They need to look a loved one in the eye, even if they've got a tube down their neck. That's the best contributing factor there is to the healing of a patient. But what do we have? Access denied. You can't go in. And what do you do? What do you do if you go to the hospital and you're outside an ICU ward? For example, you're explaining to the doctor that you need in to see your mum. They phone the police. There's a struggle. Your mum's maybe lying in a bed watching someone get pulled away in handcuffs. Is that patient care? I think not.
It's a different world. It's a different world now. And I can't believe that we're even, like you said, having to have this conversation. But this is the reality we're living in. And right, there's 100,000 NHS staff supposedly refusing to take this snake oil.
Yeah.
But how many of that 100,000 are still involved in either pushing out the vaccine, pushing out the snake oil, or midazolam, writing up prescriptions? Like, I can't help thinking, you know, and I hate to have a go at any other truth or anyone out there who's pushing the message, but I saw a doctor who said that he's worked for 2 years as on the ICU with COVID patients, and he hasn't died of COVID. Now, you can say that was a setup by the BBC or whatever, but here's my problem with it. The doctor is actually an anaesthetist. So his job on the ICU with supposed COVID patients was to make them unconscious with midazolam and another cocktail of drugs, and ventilate them and keep them unconscious for weeks at a time. Now, to me, from any stretch of the imagination, that is not a treatment for an illness. You know,
yeah.
putting young people on ventilators. So even that medical professional, in my opinion, and this is only my opinion, is culpable for the part he's played over the last 2 years, even though he's chose not to take the vaccine. He was in ICU intubating people and putting them on ventilators that probably didn't need to be put on ventilators, that would probably have been alive today if they had other treatment. And I'm only saying that, and that is only my opinion. You know, you know, people can shoot me down for it, but everyone has to look at the role they play. I've heard even the lowly ambulance man, which is how I used to make my living, even the lowly ambulance man driving around on blue lights last year in 2020 when they had no jobs because there was no patients, there was no COVID patients. Mm-hmm. So they were driving around the streets of London or wherever on blue lights for no reason, to make it look like they were busy. Then all of a sudden, 2021 comes, the vaccine rollout starts, and then they got busy. Let me tell you, they are doing five or six vaccine injuries a day, and we've had that from...
I have noticed that. You know, I'm no statistician. Without needing statistics, when I leave the house to go out in the motor, go for a drive, The blue lights, they're all over the place that I'm living in. You see, it's becoming almost a semi-regular thing. Whereas, you know, in the past, the street you live in, the odd time somebody would have took a heart attack or that had a bad fall or whatever, the ambulance would come along once and everybody would be at the window looking out, hey, what's going on at number six? That's not the case anymore. It's like they're in my, where I'm only speaking where I live and what I can see. I'm not talking about nationals. I'm just talking about where my life, my world, and I am seeing a hell of a lot of ambulance activity with the sirens and the blue lights on compared to this time last year. That's a fact. That's not anything that anybody could convince me of otherwise.
No, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing, you know, in my 20 years with the NHS in London, very busy ambulance station in central London.
Uh-huh.
I never took anyone who was in their 20s and 30s to hospital having a heart attack. I took I took thousands of people to hospital having heart attacks, not in their 20s and 30s. And now it's an everyday occurrence, even on your television on a Saturday afternoon. It's an everyday occurrence that a 20-something-year-old will collapse having a heart attack in public, on television, and no one wants to talk about it. And they're denying it. And if someone does try and talk about it, if someone does try and question it on the mainstream, they get censored and they lose their jobs. But we can see what is happening. We know the reality of the world we're living in. But people don't want to see it. And I talk about it in town, and this is one of the reasons I lost the plot on Saturday. I'm talking about the young people, the 108 athletes, professional athletes, that have died in 1 year. No one wants to talk about that. They say, oh, but athletes die. They do not die. They die at a rate of about 4 a year, not 108 a year.
Yeah.
You know.
You said earlier on, okay, you go to the town centre, you're seeing people shuffling around. They're wearing, and they always have dead eyes. You know, the eyes are gone. It's like there's something not there, in my opinion, as well. I'm only saying what I can see. You don't see their eyes dancing with laughter. You know, even if you cover your face now and you're laughing, I can tell in your eyes. But if you're sad and you're shedding a tear, I can tell that as well. Generally speaking, these people they're gone. I mean, there was never any mask mandates that I know of outdoors in the UK. I live in Northern Ireland. You're in England. That I know of, there was never a mandate even to wear them outdoors. But yet now, when this is at its lowest level of so-called lethality and infectiousness, there are people going above and beyond what they've been told to do. And they're masking up, double masking up, I'd say. It's almost like as things are getting better, they're getting even more.
Yeah.
There's a mental aspect of this, and nobody can tell me otherwise. It just, there's a disconnect between reality and what people are actually doing, and they will now believe, I think, anything. There's a percentage breakdown. I had a girl on here 2 weeks ago, and she said, okay, of 100% of people, 30% will be reasonably awake to the fact that there's something going on. 30% will be completely gone, completely brain dead, completely sucked in by ring. Then you have this 40% in the middle that could swing either way. And those are the people that the government are after right now, because they know people like you, people like me, they ain't going to convince me that what's happening is a good thing, and they're not going to convince me that the snake oil is for my benefit or the benefit of my daughter or anything else like that. Likewise for you. The other 30% at the other end, they have them anyway. They're not investing time trying to keep them on the books. They know they're never leaving the cult.
Yeah.
So what are they after? This 40% in the middle. And dare I say it, that's probably what you're after too, because these zombies, you ain't ever going to wake a zombie. You can't wake up a zombie. You just can't.
No.
It's the same with a vampire. You can't. The only way you can deal with it is a stick through the heart or squirt it with holy water, you know. And I don't advocate that either, by the way. Or if a werewolf, it's a silver bullet. It's very, very invasive techniques we're talking about here. But zombies, you cannot get through. So the people that you're trying to educate and the people that you're trying to provoke and stimulate to think using their brains is this 40% bracket in the middle. Those are the people that we need to focus on. To have a conversation with a double masker outside on a sunny day, you're wasting your breath. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I am mentally with it. You know, I'm not giving up the fight just because I've decided not to talk anymore in public. I'll talk in public, but to people that want to listen to me. Not to dead people, and because I've decided to move the parameters of my position in the resistance, I'm going to concentrate on hospitals, I'm going to concentrate on NHS staff, I'm going to concentrate on GP surgeries. These people to me are the ones who are culpable. They're the ones who are on the bottom line. They are your concentration camp guards. You know, they are the ones who are actually doing the deed, whereas, you know, we've served doctors, we've served celebrities, we've served every MP in the country has been served a notice of liability. No one in the country in those positions can say that they are not aware of the information that we are aware of. Because these packs that we've been serving to people have got all the information on, all the deaths caused by the snake oil, the yellow card reporting system, the VAERS reporting system, all the facts and figures are on there, right? No one who's received one of these packs, whether they have any legal standing at all, no one who's received one and opened it and read it can say that they are unaware. They didn't know. Sorry, yeah. I didn't know. I was just following orders. That doesn't work. But now it needs to be the NHS. We need to get in there. I've served one hospital before. That got on the mainstream media. We need to be serving every hospital, every NHS trust, every GP surgery, every vaccine centre. Anyone who's involved with the NHS and playing a part in this genocide needs to get one of them packs, them notices of liability, with all the information in. So there will never be a time where they can say, I didn't know, Your Honour. I wasn't aware, Your Honour. I thought I was doing good, Your Honour. Can't be done.
Yeah, they can't wash their hands of the fact. They can't use ignorance as a defence, or they can't say, well, we were never told and we were never made aware of the alternatives. When in fact you've went and you've served, and you've got video records of that, I'm sure as well, and you know the location of the hospital and the person who received the notice. If you go to a hospital, I've noticed the police are never too far off your trail, whether you be standing in a road or, as you say, crossing the road in London or going to a hospital. I really love that. If you haven't seen it, check out his Telegram channel. He's crossing the road really slowly in central London, and it manages to bring traffic to a halt. And when the cops challenge him and say he's an obstruction, he said, "I'm just crossing the road. You know, what can you do? They can't do anything about that." You've got to know your rights, your legal rights. Okay, so a lot of people could be listening to this thinking, "Well, you know, this guy's a criminal. He's disrupting people, and he's running around hospitals throwing notices at doctors. You're not doing anything illegal."
Because no, never, prison. Never.
Is that a first statement? Yeah. By the way, we're advocating focused, active resistance to what is being inflicted upon us by an oppressive government here. Okay, we're not talking. We're not advocating violence. We're not telling people to burn things down or to destroy property or to assault anyone. No, this has to be done legally. It has to be done above board. But there are things that can be done that rattle their cages. So if you go to the hospital, for example, and you serve a notice, would they call the cops, or when are the cops normally called in on you guys?
Yeah. The cops always turn up. The cops always turn up. Yeah. And we've told the cops on a number of occasions that we are serving these notices of liability in a peaceful and respectful way. And to be honest, more often than not, the police want to keep everything calm, everything peaceful. The police assist us in serving these notices. They're like, "Listen, just take the envelope off of these people and then they'll go." It's that simple. Yeah. You don't take the envelope, you kick up a song and dance, we stay there longer. It makes a more entertaining video for social media. If you take the envelope, you've been served, we walk away. It's that simple. And the police want that. That's what the police want, without incident. So the police have helped us on more than one occasion. They've helped us serve these notices of liability just to keep the peace. Because we're like, if we don't serve it, we're not leaving. And then they've got the problem.
They don't want that. They don't want to call for backup. They don't want to get violent. Of course, there's some psychos out there that relish this sort of business, okay? But you're going to get that in every profession everywhere, okay? But by and large, the average cop probably just wants to go home, put his feet up, watch a bit of TV like we do. He doesn't want aggravation, okay?
Absolutely.
He wants to make sure you're not doing anything wrong, which you're not. He wants to make sure the law is being upheld, which it is. And he just wants to move on. He wants you to move on. He wants to move on himself. And he wants the hospital to take their papers, okay? Ironically, you know, when you do something like that, you think when the police arrive, it's to do you harm. But in this case, they just want a quiet life. And bear in mind, if there's an incident or there's a kickoff, they have to write up a crime number. They have to do the paperwork. They could go to court. They get pulled up and it's hanging over their head for a long, long time. They don't want the aggro either. So bear in mind also, if you're listening to this, what Mick is advocating is actually in some ways facilitated by the police in that they're not breaking the law, and the police just want a quick and peaceful resolution to a situation that you want to make sure that there's notices served to a hospital or a medical practice, and you want to be going home and being about your business too. You don't want to be sitting all night in a standoff with the cops outside a hospital, you know, getting sprayed or cuffed or thrown into the back of a meat wagon any more than they want to do that to you. Is that a first statement?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and I, like you said, I get a lot of police attention, maybe more police attention than a normal civilian would get in their lifetime. But they've never arrested me, and for the most part, they've been respectful, they've been polite, you know, and they want an easy life. When we're doing protests, when we're doing yellow boards, when we're serving notices of liability, they want an easy life. They've never arrested me for one reason alone. I have never broken the law. I've never done anything illegal. Exactly. Since the COVID has started, all right, no, I've broken some of their stupid laws. When there was a law that we couldn't meet outside our houses, we used to do stand in the park. I think I may have already mentioned. Yeah. The police turned up and I said, "You haven't got enough. There's 30 of us. We're not allowed to meet in groups." Apparently it's illegal. It's illegal to stand next to someone in a park. Okay, in whose mind is that illegal? But these coppers were trying to enforce that law. We said to them, listen, there's not enough of you. We're not going anywhere. You need backup. Two more cars come. There's 30 of us. There's now 8 of them. I'm like, you're still outnumbered and we're still not going anywhere. So the cops just had to stop, stand there and watch us have our stand in the park, respectfully, peacefully. But according to them, we were breaking the law because the law says you can't stand next to someone in a public place. In the United Kingdom.
That sort of thing. But that, I think, is geared up to drive people like us nuts, because the average zombie won't care, but they'll think that's a good thing. That's to protect us. That's for our protection. But it's to drive people like us. Barmy, a local park that we near my house, a big park, they had a one-way system. Now, this park's like got a three-mile walking radius. It's outdoors, birds, you know, the sunshine, the trees, lakes, duck ponds, fucking one-way system. And 99% of the people were following it round and round. And there was a police car at the entrance of the park for like 3 months. And it was permanently stationed there to do what? To police the one-way system. It is a disconnect from reality. And I think geared to break us, geared to grind us down, geared to demoralize us and drive us slowly insane, like a Chinese water torture. You know, the water constantly dripping on your forehead. It's not painful, but it drives you nuts after a period of time. I think that's what they're at, Mick. They're trying to break us slowly but surely.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to go back a couple of years. When this first started, I went shopping to my local Asda, and they had a one-way system in Asda. I didn't follow the one-way system. I wanted to go back and re-look for something that I had missed. I got chucked out of the shop. I could not believe it. I got chucked out of Asda for going the wrong way down a one-way system in a supermarket. That is the world that we were living in. I'm like, wow, this is mental. As you can imagine, I came straight out, sat in my car and made a video about it because that's what I do. But it was just surreal. I vowed never to go in that particular Asda again, and I haven't. But the rules that they made up, and like you said, now there's no rules, but people are still wearing double masks in the high street and in the field. So it's worked. It's worked. What they did was so clever, was so powerful, that it worked on that 30%, you know, and a good majority of the 40% in the middle are still swinging that way. They've had two jabs because they thought they were going to save granny in the old folks' home. You know, this is the world we're now living in, where you can tell someone that the jab won't work. It won't protect you from anything. And the disease that it is meant to be for is as severe as the common cold. But you'll need 4 of these a year. And they'll say, oh, okay then. I better get 4 a year. Because
no question.
I don't want to get a cold.
It's the unquestioning. Yeah, it's the unquestioning obedience of those people that have dragged us into this hellhole that we're now in. And I'm sorry to say, but that's a fact. And I know this is just my opinion, again, personally speaking, you know, I'm just speaking my mind here, but it's down to the individual what they do, okay? If someone wants to wear a mask, you do it. But it's getting to the point now, I'm sorry to say, but I'm starting to look at people now going, you know, wrongly or rightly, probably wrongly, going, you're the problem here. You're the problem. These people are going about their business. They're not trying to screw up the country, but they're enabling it. And I know it and I can see it. And it's now getting, oh, should I say to that big guy? I mean, you see these big dudes. Seen this guy the other day. I was standing outside a bakery doing that, 4 people in at a time. This big dude, he was like you, and he was even bigger. He was like this. And he turned around, and I didn't see it, but he had a face mask on outside, and he had a shirt open. He was a big body, but and he had, no joke, he had 666 tattooed on his chest, and he was talking to me through his face muzzle about Omicron. He says, are you not really worried? Why are you not wearing? Not confrontation, but I was like looking up at him like this, going, big lad, you know, come on. Come on, get rid of that damn thing from off your face. But he was just looking at me blank. He didn't know what I was talking about.
Oh, I
know we shouldn't generalize here, but, you know, I can understand an old lady shuffling around on a walking simmer frame, terrified that she's going to get a pneumonia or COVID and die. But you see kids and you see teenagers and you see people that are supposed to be rebellious, you know, teenage boys and girls and groups running around in mass. These are the kids that you would have thought would have said to hell with you, to the system. But in fact, they've got them too. It's a bit demoralizing. I don't know what it's like where you are, but I'm seeing it all the time. School kids, teenagers and...
So I'll tell you a quick story, very much exactly like what you said. I made a video about it whilst I was in the gym because I had to. I'm in the gym, a big jack guy comes in, steroided up, you know, like you say. He's wearing his mask, right? There's a dozen people in the gym. No one's wearing a mask. They walk in the gym from the high street wearing the mask. Then they take the mask off. This dude goes to the bench, takes the mask off, does his set, then puts the mask on to walk to the next piece of equipment, which is about 3 feet away, and then takes his mask off again. And I'm like, what kind of indoctrination would make you think that what you're doing is protecting anybody, let alone yourself? But they don't see it. They don't think about it. They're not interested in it. They just do it. They're so indoctrinated. It's like a robot. It's robotic. Like, why are you doing that? Are you going to catch COVID in that spot, but you wouldn't catch it in that spot? What's going on in your head? What makes you think that that is logical in any world? But
it's conditioning,
do it.
Mick. It's conditioning. It's a bit like if you go to the gym, you're kind of conditioned as well. When you want to do a bench press, you put the bench up, you load up the plates on either side, you put the collars on, you lie down, you get your fingers just at the right spot, you do a wide grip, an air grip, and then you pump out 8 reps, then you stand up, you take a 2 minute break and you do it again. You do that without thinking because you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah,
if you've been going to the gym or whatever it happens to be. That's now the position that we're in with people wearing masks. Without thinking, like, I don't know about you, I always put a seatbelt on when I'm in a car. I don't have to think about it. But when my ass hits the seat, the first thing I do with my left hand is I reach over and I pull across. I don't even have to think about it.
It's automatic,
it for so long. It's automatic. It's a conditioned reflex response now, and it's just something that I do. I sadly think there's now a multitude of people that have been programmed the same way, that they go somewhere, their hands have to be pulling up a piece of cloth to their face and taking it on and putting it off. It's hard to break that conditioning, especially when they don't want to be broken.
Yeah.
They want to hang on to that.
Yeah, yeah. And I do understand. I accept that there's a proportion of people, like you said, the 30%, that can be manipulated. They can be hypnotized. That's how we managed to go into two world wars, for heaven's sake. You know what I mean? With pure propaganda, mind control, fear porn, you know, and they've been using it on us forever. But there's a lot of us that have seen it forever. You know, I've seen it from a very young age. I was aware of the different reality when I was a very young man. So I've grown up as, hence Mad Mixed Conspiracies, I've grown up being called Mad Mick, you know. And like you said, if we've said some of this stuff that's happening now 2 years ago, the people around us would have said, no, you're a mad conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
You know, if you say you can't visit your child.
It's all came to pass. Everything has come to pass. And here's the disturbing thing, and we're going to wrap this up. We've only got a few minutes left. But here's the disturbing thing. The stuff that you're talking about now, or the stuff that we're talking about now, that could be happening in a year or two's time with injuries coming and people dropping dead. Again, there's people listening in here today thinking those guys are crazy, those guys are unhinged. But we've been right about everything so far. I hope you're wrong, and I hope I am wrong for the sake of this country and for the sake of our families and for the sake of our children. I hope, Mick, you are crazy. I hope I am crazy. I hope I am unhinged, because if we're right, my friend, if we are right in what we're saying and we're right in what we're predicting, it's going to be a hellish apocalyptic scenario within the United Kingdom and Ireland over the next 12 to 24 months. It's not going to take a generation. It's not going to take a full-on war. This is going to be happening within our shores and on our borders, I would say, within the next 12 to 24 months. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. What, you know, this plan has been in motion since the 90s, since before the 90s. We heard Ronald Reagan, he was the president of the States in the 80s, and we heard him talking about the New World Order back then. So this isn't new. The agenda for the 21st century was written way before the 21st century. It was the plan of what they was going to bring in from the year 2000 up to the year 2030. And we're living it, and we're coming to the end of it. We're in the last 8 years. This is the home run for these people. They're stepping it up. They know what their plan is. They've been planning it a long time. And, you know, the frustrating thing is they've allowed for people like me and you. They know there was going to be a resistance. They expect the resistance. They manipulate the resistance. They control all the marches we go on. You know what I mean? I feel violated. Even though we're on the side of the truth, it's still being manipulated by the New World Order. You know, they're controlling all the stuff we do. They control the social media. They put us over on Telegram so we're only talking to each other. They block us out from YouTube. They block us out from Facebook. You know, we can't get our message out to civilians. We can only talk to other resistance people. So, yeah, I am upset. I'm always upset. Can't help it. This bloody war's made me upset. Well,
listen, I view these little talks with people like yourself as a little bit of a therapy session as well as educating people. I feel a little bit less heavy than I did when you came on because we're venting a little bit and we appreciate people listening. You may not agree with us. You don't have to agree with us, but we're just putting out our opinions and our points of view. Mick, we are out of time, my friend. I want to thank you again for taking time out to come and speak with us. And hopefully, as things develop and you're still ongoing in the battlefield, you'll give us updates every few weeks anyway. God bless you. Thank you for coming on TNT Radio. Don't go away. Mick Chaves, Kent Resistance. We're going to win this one. Take care, everyone.